Well, welcome back, and it's David Connolly here with the Archaeology News Weekly. This news is brought to you in partnership between Stone Pages and the British Archaeological Jobs and Resources website. All the stories have been collected from various sources, and to view details on each story, including the source, please see the Stone Pages website at news.stonepages.com. And the main headlines from around the world are as follows. A 4,000-year-old human skeleton is found in Tajikistan, and an archaeologist calls for a dig in North Somerset in England. An amateur is convinced that a boulder near Loch Ness could have been an ancient calendar, and new evidence supports China as the cradle of rice cultivation. We have the date for the first use of iron being pushed back in Turkey, and Germany's Stone Age cannibalism gets horrific. While more genteelly, a large prehistoric roundhouse is unearthed in Somerset. Early agriculture left traces in animal bones, allowing more precise understanding of the transition. While here in Scotland, a Neolithic hilltop home is discovered near Edinburgh. It also seems that the first Americans are the ones that brought anthrax with them nearly 13,000 years ago. We also report on ancient cup marks and cupules found in India. And after we reported on the new cache of Clovis tools being found, the debate rages on for what exactly it means. A 4,000-year-old male human skeleton has been discovered in Tajikistan, experts say. The well-preserved skeleton was found by a group of local residents in the foothills near the Tajik village of Tudakkavish. Experts said the skeleton's face-down posture indicates that the man was not buried, but likely died in battle. Yusuf Yakupov from the Institute of History, Archaeology and Ethnography of the National Academy of Sciences said the remains and the artefacts found next to it most probably date back to the Bronze Age, about 2,500 years BCE. He explained that in the Kulyab region, where they have conducted archaeological excavation over a number of years, several Bronze Age artefacts and monuments have been found, including burial grounds and settlements. This is the best preserved to date from this period, however. Battle, or was he one of the fallen, or did he just trip? The potential for prehistoric archaeological finds under a caravan showroom in St George's, North Somerset in England, could scupper plans to build 9 homes on the site. An archaeologist is demanding a trial excavation on the site before any work takes place. In a letter to North Somerset planners, Vince Russett said an ancient salt-making industry of national importance may have operated on the site. Davin Caravan's managing director, Glenn Davis, however, said that the cost of the excavation would price the business out of the planned development. Late prehistoric and early Roman features had been recorded at the magistrate court in Willow Close during a prior development. The site lies in the same area where virtually all sites investigated have yielded evidence of later prehistoric to early Roman salt making. The industry is of sufficient size to be of national importance because of the high potential of this proposal to contain archaeological structures and deposits relating to one or more of these sites. It's imperative the site is evaluated by trial excavation prior to determining the application. North Somerset Council is set to make a decision on the planning application next week. Well, if I can just put out a personal call to Glenn Davis of Davin Caravans, the cost of trial excavation should not be too badly, and if he wants to give me a call, I'll even come all the way down there and do it for him. An amateur archaeologist believes a giant boulder on a hill overlooking Loch Ness in the Scottish Highlands was used as a guide for crop sowing and harvesting by residents of the Great Glen more than 5,000 years ago. John Forsyth believes the boulder was positioned and sculpted so people could use it as a marker against the sun to signal when their crops should be planted in spring and harvested in autumn. He believes a community lived to the east of the boulder and used the setting sun to establish the spring and autumn equinoxes, when day and night is roughly the same length. As part of his research, Mr. Forsyth used a global positioning system to locate another rock behind his home, which lies directly east of the boulder and has the same latitude, suggesting an alignment which he thinks is deliberate. The retired geography teacher spent the spring equinox on Friday the 20th of March photographing the sun setting to ensure his calculations were accurate. Mr. Forsyth takes a keen interest in archaeology and believes the boulder was last moved around the same time as the Callanish standing stones on Lewis and the structures at Stonehenge were erected. Highland Council archaeologist Kirsty Cameron was interested to learn of the theory, People who were living in that time had a very good use of astronomy, she said. We encourage people to contact us about sites of possible interest, but establishing a time for this is going to be hard, because, after all, it's just a stone. Well, that's quite amazing. A stone and another stone. Two stones, draw a line between them, and it's perfectly straight. But you never know. There's more of these that we actually need. The more people that come forward and put forward these theories, the better for all of us. We shouldn't just dismiss these out of hand. Dorian Fuller from the Institute of Archaeology, University College London, joined by Zheng Zhufei from the Zhejiang Provincial Institute of Antiquity and Archaeology, and other Chinese archaeologists, to investigate rice remains at the Neolithic excavation site at Chanlouchan, part of the local Hemudu Neolithic culture that goes back 7,000 years. The research reported in the most recent issue of Science magazine concluding that the rice cultivation was a slow domestication over the course of 2 to 3 millennia in the lower Yangtze Valley region of China between 6,900 and 6,300 years ago. The Hemudu people may not have been the first to initiate rice cultivation, but they certainly did cultivate rice and did domesticate it. As one of the oldest rice cultivation bases in the world, Hemudu has attracted much research interest, but not everyone was convinced by the results. Chinese archaeologists believe that the early Holocene, the period starting around about 10,000 years ago, Neolithic people both in the north and south of China may have begun harvesting wild rice and initiating rice cultivation that eventually led to domestication. Fuller argued in the study of agricultural origins that it is prudent to presume plants are wild until evidence can be found to indicate domestication. Zheng and many other Chinese archaeologists disagreed, though, saying their research has uncovered traces of domestication processes in many Hemudu sites. They said that they are able to tell the wild grains from domesticated ones by their size, but Fuller wants hard evidence. Hence, the team turned to another important trait for rice domestication, loss of seed shattering. Wild rice seed shatters automatically, while domesticated rice will not, even when it reaches maturity, where it needs to be manually threshed. As they dug at the Hemudu site, they observed that the percentage of rice remains, along with all plant remains, went up from 8 to 24%, pointing to an increased dietary importance of rice over the time of the site. The researchers also separated the rice remains into three categories based upon their shattering signs, and determined that as time progressed, the domestic type of rice had increased in occurrence from about 27 to 39% over the course of 300 years. Well, shattering conclusions, if you don't mind me saying. Japanese researchers digging in Turkey have pushed back the date of the start of the Iron Age, until now presumed to have been around about 1500 BCE, with the discovery of fragments of an iron tool that predates previous finds by several centuries. The implication of the excavations at Kaman Kalehoyuk, about 100 kilometres southeast of Ankara, is that the history of iron tool production may have to be rewritten. Archaeologists from the Middle Eastern Cultural Center in Japan excavated the artifact, which is in pieces, but would have had a total length of 5 centimeters if restored, back in 2000. The iron piece is believed to be part of a knife from a stratum about 4,000 years old. Another fragment, a piece of iron slag, measures 2 centimeters in diameter, and with two rocks containing iron also being found, they can suggest that an iron workshop existed on the site. It was previously thought that iron began with the Hittite kingdoms, dating to the 14th and 12th centuries BCE. The German city of Speyer in Rhineland boasts some macabre relics. A collection of skulls, shin bones and vertebra might not seem unusual in an archaeology museum, but these particular remains are special. They all show signs of having been cut, scraped or broken, indicating that their owners were cannibalised. These grooves running from the base of the nose to the back of the neck or on the temple show beyond all possible doubt that the flesh was torn off, comments Andrea Ziebelang, the regional head of archaeology, as she held up a skull. All these human remains were found at the Stone Age site of Herxheim near Speyer. About 7,000 years ago, farmers who grew wheat and barley and raised pigs, sheep and cattle settled here, building a village of 4 to 12 houses, the postals of which have still survived. At the time, the first farmer stockherders were moving into Europe, supplanting the hunter-gatherer predecessors. These settlers came from the north between 5,400 and 4,950 BCE, belonging to the Linear Potterate culture, Linear Band Karamik culture. Two lines of ditches were dug around the settlement, but they cannot have been defensive because they were not continuous, nor does it seem that they were intended for mass burial, as the LBK people generally buried or burned their dead. However, during a rescue dig just before the area was developed as an industrial estate, archaeologists uncovered tens of thousands of human bones in some of the ditches. During the first series of excavations, the numerous injuries visible on the skeletons was taken as evidence of a massacre. But in 2008, Bruno Bullichten, an anthropologist at Bordeaux University, examined the fragments recovered from one of the trenches, pointing out that nearly 2,000 samples belong to fewer than 10 individuals. It's impossible to establish direct proof of cannibalism, but here we have a systematic, repetitive gesture that suggests that the bodies were eaten. The marks of breaking, of cutting, scraping and crushing indicate that the bodies were dismembered, tendons and ligaments severed and flesh torn off the bones. The vertebrae were cut up to remove the ribs, just as butchers do today with loin chops. The tops of the skulls were opened to extract the brains. Another telling clue is that there are proportionally fewer bones containing marrow, particularly vertebrae and short bones, suggesting that they were set aside. A quick investigation of the bones in neighbouring ditches showed that they had suffered much the same fate, and extrapolating to the whole site, the potential for 1,000 people being butchered exists. There's no other example in prehistory of a mass grave of this size. We're dealing with an exceptional event, said Zeeblang. Other cases of Neolithic cannibalism have certainly been identified, particularly in France, but never on this scale. So what can this bloodbath mean? The potsherds found among the human remains suggest it has occurred over a period of no longer than 50 years. There's nothing to imply the victims were killed for food, though. Only under extreme conditions would 100 or so farmers have been able to overcome 1,000 people. The archaeologists have therefore concluded that this was some form of ritual killing. In some cases, the tops of the skulls were arranged to form a nest, scattered with pottery fragments. Broken adzes, jewellery made of shells, and the paws of dogs. The team that discovered the site may have come up with an hypothesis explaining the cannibalism, though. Members of the LBK culture deliberately gathered here with their prisoners and pottery to take part in sacrificial ceremonies. At this time, the culture was undergoing a severe crisis, which led to its disappearance. Perhaps they hoped to prevent the end of their world through some kind of ceremony of which cannibalism was just a part. Well, all we can say is that it didn't work. Fascinating story, though. Excavation of proposed park and ride site in Taunton, Somerset in England has revealed a possible Bronze Age sauna and one of the largest prehistoric roundhouses in Britain. The house dates from the Iron Age, 400 to 100 BCE, and was constructed from wooden posts with a thatched roof and had a diameter of 17 metres. A mound of burned stones indicating a 2,500-year-old Bronze Age sauna has also been discovered, as well as the remains of a Roman farm. The finds unearthed from the Cambria farm site since December 2008 are to be displayed in the Museum of Somerset. Archaeologists have spent more than 3 months on the site. The first finds were unearthed in December last year when evidence of Bronze Age fields were exposed. Other finds have included a pair of Roman shears, three Iron Age spearheads, loom weights and Roman brooches, as well as large amounts of pottery. Experts said there were originally four houses on the site that were next to the fields where mixed agriculture of cereal crops and sheep farming were practiced. It appears that after the roundhouses went out of use, the site was used to bury the dead. A number of Roman graves have been excavated, including some very unusual burials. Well, on that mysterious note, I think I might have to sort of try and track down more about that story. I do like the idea of unusual burials. Unravelling the origins of agriculture in different regions around the globe has been a challenge for archaeologists. Now, researchers writing in the Proceedings for the National Academy of Sciences report finding evidence of early human experiments with grain cultivation in East Asia. They gathered this information from an unlikely source: dog and pig bones. The dog and pig bones, as well as bones of other animals analysed in the study, come from an archaeological site in the region of northwest China, considered to be possible early centre of East Asian agriculture. Chemical traces within the dog bones suggest a high millet concentration in their diet, a grain that wild dogs are unlikely to eat in large quantities in the wild. But this was a staple of early agricultural societies in northwest China. If the dogs were consuming that much millet, their human masters were likely doing the same. The bones come from a Neolithic site known as Dadiwan in China's western lowest plateau, excavated first by a Chinese team in the late 70s and early 80s, and in 2006 by a team from University of California. Humans occupied the site during two main phases: phase 1 from 7,900 to 7,200 years ago, and phase 2 from 6,500 to 4,900 years ago. Although some fossil remains of millet plants have been found in both of these deposits, the fossils don't directly reveal just how much millet contributed to the local diet. The researchers found that most of the dog bones in the phase 1 deposits bore the isotopic signature of a high millet diet. This suggests that the dogs were domesticated and fed by humans who harvested millet. Bones of pigs from the site tell a slightly different story, though. In phase 1 deposits, the pig bones show no signs of millet in their diet, so they were probably wild pigs hunted and eaten by the people. But by phase 2, the pig bones do have isotopic signature of millet, so they were probably domesticated by this time. I do love a bit of lateral thinking. That's what makes archaeology such a special subject. The remains of a hilltop home believed to be about 5,000 years old have been discovered on the outskirts of Edinburgh in Scotland. The Neolithic roundhouse found on a site where a quarry is due to be expanded is one of the oldest prehistoric buildings to be discovered at the Scottish capital. Archaeologists have hailed it as one of the most important finds ever made in Edinburgh because of its age, which is about the same as Scarberry in Orkney, and its unique location. It's also expected to help fill in a largely unknown chapter of Scottish history, when farming had only recently spread to Britain from Europe. The site at Ravelrig Hill near Damahoy enjoys spectacular views across the Lothians and Fife. Experts believe the roundhouse was probably built by one of the first families of farmers to start producing their own food in the area. Archaeologists from the Glasgow University's Archaeological Research Division, GARD, have spent several months working on the area, which is already home to the remains of two prehistoric hill forts. The house, the remains of which were found in a huge circular ditch, was surrounded by a large egg-shaped enclosure. Although no materials such as pottery have been discovered, archaeologists have been able to date flint recovered from the site, and the remains of an internal fireplace, where C14 dating was possible, were also found. The site is thought to be roughly the same age as the cairn at Cairn Papal, which is widely regarded as Scotland's most prehistoric burial site, and which can also be seen from Ravelrig Hill. Donna Maguire, project director for GARD, said that there may once have been a number of settlements on the hill, lost when quarrying began in the area over 150 years ago. The discovery was only made because Edinburgh City Council asked that an archaeological dig was carried out before construction giant Tarmac was allowed to expand its quarrying operations in the area. All materials recovered are being taken away for analysis, and the discovery is not expected to delay work to expand the quarry. Tarmac has been quarrying there since 1987. So yet again you can see that archaeology does not get in the way. Humans were dying of anthrax in North America much earlier than thought, perhaps after scavenging the remains of infected animals while migrating from Asia during the Ice Age, a new study says. We've always thought that anthrax was an old world disease that was brought to the New World by Europeans around the 1500s, said study co-author Paul Keim from North Arizona University. But the new report suggests that ancient humans entering the continent thousands of years ago imported the disease after crossing the Bering Land Bridge, which once connected present-day Alaska and eastern Siberia. Scientists think anthrax originated in Africa or the Middle East thousands of years ago. One popular theory to explain its presence in North America is that it was brought by Christopher Columbus and others beginning in the late 15th century. The new genetic tests of hundreds of samples of one of North America's most common forms of anthrax, however, suggest the disease spread from north to south. The tests also suggest that anthrax first appeared in North America around 13,000 years ago, about when scientists think humans were crossing the Bering Land Bridge. Humans traversing the land bridge would have scavenged carcasses of bison and other animals that may have been killed by anthrax. While some other parts of the new theory are speculative, it makes a lot of sense overall. A chance visit to the remote Pudukkottai hamlet in Tamil Nadu in India to assess the damage caused by illegal granite quarrying on an ancient protected archaeological site helped an Archaeological Survey of India team uncover what could be evidence of the first artistic expression of prehistoric man in that region. The cup marks, or cupules, are similar to those showcased in the UNESCO World Heritage Sites of Bimbetka in Madhya Pradesh. In three caves, they found rock paintings and stone beds used by Jain preachers. The greatest discovery was the cup marks. Besides pounding on lime and iron hematite to get materials to paint on rock, early man used stone tools to carve out these symbols on cave surfaces. The 400 cup marks spread over 100 square feet area of the cave roof have been tucked away so well that they have been protected from any changes over the last several millennia. And so we are going to be able to learn a lot more about the culture that created them. Last month, University of Colorado archaeologist Douglas Bamforth announced the discovery of a 13,000-year-old cache of 83 stone tools found in Boulder, Colorado in the USA. Biochemical analysis of residues on their edges indicate that some were used to butcher horses and camels. Robert Yu from the Laboratory of Archaeological Science at California State performed the test and said that the discovery of the protein residue caused the investigators to change their mind about the purpose of the cache. Initially, they suspected it had been a ritual deposit, but because some of the tools had been used, they then decided it was a utilitarian cache. According to Bamforth, some ancient hunters buried the items, fully expecting to come back at a later date and retrieve them. It's certainly possible that the artifacts represented this kind of cache, but it may be premature to discard the idea that the artifacts are the remains of an Ice Age ceremony. In 1982, a farmer in Portage County ploughed up 356 teardrop-shaped blades made from the Flint Ridge flint. Olaf Prüfer, an archaeologist at Kent State University, studied this cache and concluded that it was a ritual deposit of the Adena culture, around about 50 BCE. The flint blades, similar to some of the artifacts in the Boulder Clovis cache, did not appear to have been used and were strewn with red ochre and had been held together in a wooden vessel. Prüfer thought the cache represented a ritual offering made by an individual who had intentionally dropped a container of flint into a shallow lake that later became a bog. Native Americans made similar kinds of offerings for spiritual reasons. It's fascinating to consider the possibility that such religious practices have their roots in America's Ice Age cultures. It is, of course, possible that the people of the Clovis culture had their own reasons for depositing troves of artifacts in the ground. However, such caches might have provided a way for a colonizing people to transform a vast and unknown natural landscape into a cultural landscape through the creation of such symbolic landmarks. And on that fabulous theoretical note, it's actually one of the lovely things about archaeology. You can really theorise and dream about what happened in the past. You can create your own ideas. So if anyone actually has any other ideas, please get in touch with us. And finally, of course, I would like to say a big hello to Pat Perrys from Arizona, who wrote to me on Facebook saying that she's been listening to this podcast from the very beginning. Well, I hope that I was even better looking than you could imagine after what you said there on Facebook. Thanks very much for getting in touch with that, and thanks again to all of you out there as well who listen every week. Can I just remind people towards the end about, of course, the pasthorizons.com website. If you haven't been along yet, what's stopping you? You're going to be able to find a vast wealth of information about volunteer opportunities across the world. And also we have the ever popular magazine. It's also linked to our video and podcasting facilities there as well. And if you actually feel like getting your hands dirty, you can even go and buy some tools and you'll be well equipped for life out in the field. Can I also remind people that the BAJR site, the British Archaeological Jobs site, is still going great guns, so come along and join the fun there at www.bajr.org. And more can always be found at Stonepages, news.stonepages.com. I should also say that hopefully in the next issue of this podcast news, there might be a little surprise coming, but I'll leave you on that cliffhanger, and thank you very much for listening to Archaeology News Weekly, and hope you'll return again next week.